The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Straight Talk Money with Peggy Tuck along with Charles Sizemore. And we're going to switch gears here a little bit. Charles, we did touch on this subject yesterday, but sure. We brought in an expert so we can get a little more in depth in it. I've got Terry Simpson, multi-asset strategist for the BlackRock Investment Institute. He's responsible for conducting capital market research and conveying the firm's market views to institutional as well as retail clients. He writes about the portfolio construction implications of a global macro and multi-asset class research, and we're happy to have him as our guest today. Good morning, Terry. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you getting up. I'm not sure which coast you're on. Are you on west or east?
We're based in New York.
Oh, good for you.
So
okay.
This is good timing for us.
Hey, it's the middle of the day. And by the way, it's National Pancake Day, so if you pass an IHOP, be sure to drop in and get some free pancakes. Anyway, there's an article out this morning about the OECD, and that's the organization, for those that don't know, for economic cooperation and development. And they are pretty much warning of possible political uncertainty, rate hikes, protectionism that could put a damper on some global growth. At BlackRock, is this something that you all are concerned about as well?
Yeah, so I would say that when we think about some of the rhetoric that's been coming out of Washington here in the United States in terms of economic nationalism, it does pose, kind of give us a cause for concern, because we are still very fragile in this global economic recovery. But I would also say that when probably cooler heads prevail, is that we recognize that a large majority of countries across the globe still recognize that globalization probably does provide benefits. Now, there are negatives that we've witnessed over the last 20 or 30 years of globalization coming into the line, but I think what's important here is saying, okay, how can we get better and how can we actually work together as a globe to enhance economic output? So I would say, and when we see some of our statistics and the analysis that we run, we are actually pretty favorable on developed market growth across the globe, and as well as countries within emerging market, mainly one of the biggest ones being China.
You know, you mentioned China. China, it looks like they've finally turned a corner, at least in the short term. They've been contracting, their growth rate's been slowing, I should say. And, there's always been fear that with China, we're just one small step away from the big one, where, you know, that the Chinese miracle is finally going to blow up. How do you guys feel about that? I mean, how do you feel about China's short-term and longer-term prospects?
Yeah, I think as you mentioned, too, the number one thing that clients will always ask us about, I think, and have worry over with China is basically the debt-to-GDP ratio, which is tipping close to about 300% right now. And, honestly, that is a cause for concern. For us, as we look at it, in the near term, I think we're okay with that. We do recognize that they cannot continue to leverage up their economy at the speed that they have, because sooner or later, you know, we will have somewhat of a challenging environment. But one of the things recently we've seen just from last year, China grew at 6.7% in terms of their GDP, and just recently over the weekend, China put a target out of 6.5% for this year. So we're, I think, at the verge where many investors across the globe are recognizing that China is no longer that double-digit growing economy that it used to be, but we're just trying to figure out what is that long run kind of sustainable number. And we think, you know, at 6 to 6.5%, that's sustainable. So we are actually finding opportunities in China. We think clients and investors should actually be staying in China and just trying to think about what the new economy is actually going to be and how you can potentially make profit in that environment.
You know, for our listeners that aren't as engrossed in this. You said China has 300% GDP debt to GDP. What would what does a lot of the rest of the world look like? Just as a point of reference.
Yeah, so the United States is close to about 100%. Now, some of the European countries that have also leveraged up their balance sheet after the crisis to try to do investment and bring up their domestic economies, Some of them have got to levels of, you know, 100 and between 150%. Some of that has come down in recent years. But, yeah, it just goes to show how outsized the China number is relative to developed markets. And I would say even other select emerging market economies that China sits in.
Sure.
Are there other areas in that sector of the world, you know, in Southeast Asia and everything, that you all are seeing potential for investment and growth as well?
Yes. When we think about kind of the emerging markets, one of the things we always try to do is break it up geographically, Peggy, I think, as you're getting to. And we want to focus on particularly Latin America, that we can go to the Europe emerging market countries, and then even down to Asia. Asia actually has been one of our preferred destinations for investing over the last couple of months or so. And this was in part because we did believe that China was going to be stabilizing. And as China stabilized, we felt that that could actually provide a nice impulse to the rest of broader emerging market Asia. But we also felt that, importantly, if the global economy was improving, which is our base case for 2017, and trade picks up and potentially exports pick up, we know that broader emerging market Asia is a manufacturing hub. And so any improvement in some of those numbers, we could actually see a benefit on some of those economies. So it's one of our preferred destinations from an equity investing standpoint, emerging market Asia.
Yeah, sure. I mean, China is just such a big economy, such a big part of that region, that sort of as goes China, so goes the rest of it. When Chinese demand is strong, it creates demand from those other countries, just, you know, both for manufacturing and raw materials and everything else. So it's very good to see China getting it together here.
And as far as the geopolitical things that are going on in that part of the world as well, could that derail where you see the growth?
Yeah, I think it's always a worry. You know, I think we focused on, we kind of put our year-ahead outlook, and I probably would extend this idea that probably when we do our mid-year outlook, that geopolitical risk is still going to be dominating our conversations. So, and we specifically, when we look at Asia and the relationship between the United States and China, and you know, the current president of the United States and his views on China and how they've benefited from some of their policies, from our policies, we do think about it and kind of what it means for markets and just obviously what it means for economics. I would say at this point, when you look at the two countries combined, you know, they represent almost about 32% of world GDP. So it's very important that not only just from a U.S.-China relationship standpoint that there is they find kind of amicable grounds here, but I would also say just from a world kind of global standpoint that many other countries are looking to U.S. and China and saying, how are you guys going to actually kind of lead the global economy in this next leg of the cycle? So we do look at it, and it's very, very important. And, you know, as I said, hopefully as policy develops here further in 2017 down in Washington, we will get a little bit glimpse of how that plays out.
A cooler head will prevail, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, I was that part of the world, you also wonder, too, you know, what's that one wild card risk that nobody can quite, you know, assign probabilities to, and that's North Korea. I guess the whole, the whole region could all come undone with one rogue missile, but I guess we'll just have to hope for the best on that one.
Yes, I mean, we've been following this, you know, obviously, from a geopolitical angle, and we're going to have to see how this develops. What's going to be really important, I think, is President Trump is going to have an opportunity to see how he leads in a global environment. While he's been kind of spending a lot of his political capital on healthcare reform and tax reform, we do have to remember that other geopolitical issues such as Russia and North Korea are very, very big, important stories, and that will actually influence investor sentiment.
Okay, we're going to take a break here on the other side of this segment. We are going to have the opening bells. Let's delve into some of the other areas outside of our borders that might be good opportunities to look for investments. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, bringing you the wisdom of Wall Street. We'll be right back. The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions. We've got Terry Simpson, multi-asset strategist for the BlackRock Investment Institute, on the phone with us today. And we've been talking about the Asia region, because they do deal with the global investing. And also, I just like to switch geography here a little bit. You know, the European economy has been growing a little faster than the U.S. economy, Terry. And so, but there's a lot of things that are going on over there right now. And while we did discuss this yesterday a little bit about European exposure, while their economy may be growing, you still have a lot of elections that are going to be going on this year and a lot of other types of things that are coming into play. Are you all still bullish on Europe?
We have maintained our overweight stance on Europe. And as you point out, much of the concern has been over the potential election calendar for 2017, starting with Dutch elections and then going to France and even in Germany in late October. Now, we know investing is always a choice, but we believe that the political risk is a little bit overstated. And so what we have decided to do is that try to think about what are the potential opportunities for an investor on the back end of all of the political risk that we're seeing. And so it's one of the reasons why we still maintain our overweight in Europe. And I would say also, too, you know, just internationally, we're overweight versus kind of the U.S. markets where we're neutral. But the reason that we want to stay overweight international is because what we've seen historically is that usually in an improving global economic environment, it is those international markets that actually give you a little bit more upside, and particularly in an environment where the U.S. markets are a little bit over fairly valued and kind of hitting that top-end range in terms of valuation. So we want to be focusing on Europe, and I know that if you look at the kind of returns right now, Europe hasn't really generated the same returns as U.S., but we still do think there's potential throughout the rest of the year.
You know, well, another angle of that is the euro has been so weak lately that that should give a boost. Well, it should be, I guess, twofold. It should give a boost to their profitability, but it also gives an investor buying in today the opportunity to profit really twice. You know, first from an appreciation of the stocks, and then second from an appreciation of the euro relative to the dollar, it should that happen. So I agree. I think Europe's interesting right now.
Well, we have a question coming in from the audience, Terry. This is from one of our listeners here in the Houston area. He would like to know if you really believe that the developed nations are ever going to pay their debt or at least reduce it moving forward.
So we're in a situation where debt levels are a little bit higher, and I would say there's good debt and somewhat sometimes there's bad debt. Now, if the debt that is issued that is used to enhance productivity and enhance and improve investment opportunities across different regions, then that could be very beneficial for long-run growth. You know, obviously, the old adage that it takes money to make money. So, but what we've recognized that over the crisis, some of that debt was somewhat bad debt. And I think that over the what we call the deleveraging or the taking down of debt since the crisis, many countries have realized that they do not want to balloon their balance sheets to those levels. And it's one of the challenges that when we see and we talk about, you know, global infrastructure across the world, why it hasn't really been funded a lot. And the reason it hasn't been funded is because many national governments, whether it be U.S., Europe, or even Asia, they do not want to pay for that in fully, because if they pay for that in full, then they will have to actually increase their debt load. So interest rates are at historical lows. We know that. That is helping them service their debt. We would have to be concerned if interest rates were rising dramatically and what kind of pressures that would put on some of the countries around the world. But for right now, I mean, we probably would take the stance that their debt is going to be part of this, so trying to actually increase economic opportunities going into the rest of this decade.
Well, you know, you mentioned interest rates and how that makes it, you know, easier to service debt and what have you. It seems like we're moving away from that a little bit, and that you know, the Fed is wanting to raise rates at least once or twice, maybe three times this year. Even the European Central Bank is starting to back off some of its more aggressively dovish monetary policy. What do you see the European Central Bank doing this year?
Yeah, as we sit here and see that basically headline inflation in Europe, so including energy and food and food, which are more volatile components, is approaching close to over 2% now. But one of the things that the ECB will also closely monitor is what we call core inflation. So core inflation actually strips out that volatile, those volatile components of energy and food, and tries to give a good reading on what inflation is in an economy. Now, in Europe, that number is about 0.9%, so it's not close to the ECB's 2% target. Now, they are making improvement, but I think one of the things we don't want to, you know, call for a victory here, and so I think we would still expect to have some accommodation, but as we get into Q4 of this year, we'll start to see how does the ECB start to prepare the markets for a removal of their accommodation. Remember last year, they reduced their quantitative easing program, or their program where they were going out and buying European government debt from about $80 billion to $60 billion. So maybe we'll see what path that will take over the course of 2018, but I would say that we'll probably get more of a direction from the ECB probably by the latter half of this year, if not in Q4.
Yeah, so, they made that mistake. They made the mistake of tightening too soon a few years ago, and they're probably less likely to make that mistake again.
And Terry, now you once again, keeping on the interest rates, it's pretty apparent that next week we'll probably see that hike. And what might that mean for investors, especially those best investors that might be in some fixed income?
Yeah, so it looks like the market is, you know, pricing in a rate hike. But I was looking at probabilities today; it's about 98%. Now, the markets can be wrong; we know that. But it does look like the Fed has the opportunity for where they've communicated their view, and market participants have adjusted accordingly off their expectations. In terms of fixed income, you know, what investors should be thinking about is not necessarily one rate hike or maybe two rate hikes in this year, but also what the trajectory of the normalization or the Federal Reserve's tightening path will be. We still think that's likely to be shallower than in years past, but obviously we'll get more direction over the course of the next couple of years. So what we've recommended to our investors in terms of owning bonds is, one, if you're worried about interest rate risk as interest rates start to rise, what you want to do is shift down to more shorter maturity, or what we call shorter duration fixed income. And then the other thing that we want to think about is particularly owning credit fixed income. So this could range from corporate debt in the investment grade space, the high quality companies, or all the way down to high yield debt. So a little bit more riskier companies within the corporate space. Because usually in an improving economy, that the credit sectors of fixed income will actually perform fairly well. But in just terms of general U.S. Treasury exposure, we want to be bringing down our overall duration risk and just kind of shifting to more shorter duration instruments.
Terry, how can someone get more information if they would like to on BlackRock Investment Institute?
Yeah, so we have a external webpage, and anybody can find that at blackrock.com/insights, and that will take you actually to BlackRock Investment Institute and all of our capital market research and our white papers and our weekly commentary that we actually publish.
Okay, folks, go to BlackRock.com. Terry Simpson, multi-asset strategist for the BlackRock Investment Institute, joining us today. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Charles and I have got more. Hey, does your dream retirement include some margaritas? I hope mine does. You're listening to Straight Talk Money. And I love to become a funeral pilot. You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.